hope you have it cranked up and it's rocking your house or your car or your ear holes and wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening. We're so glad you've chosen to tune into DLC. Maybe you're stuck in traffic. We're going to be there with you. Maybe you're on a workout. Maybe you're one of our geeks in sneaks, rocking a run or at the gym. We're going to help you with 90-plus minutes of gaming goodness because DLC is on now. Your downloadable commentary for the week delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Lynda. Oh, Lynda! They made that possible, bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who got served in Street Fighter 2 last night by yours truly. Two games to one, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
I will admit, we played Super Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition, and Jeff's 90s arcade
skills. I got skills! I got mad Street Fighter skills.
They did. He has a better player than me. He won two matches to my one. I did, however, perfect you.
You did. You're the one match that I lost. You did have a perfect round. Your E-Honda.
E-Honda versus your... Were you Ken or Ryu?
It was Ken. I was Ken. Oh, no. I was Ryu. You're right. Yeah, I was Ryu.
But you're Chun-Li. Ooh, yeah, vicious.
Chun-Li is good, man. It was cool. We went to this place, this retro place here in Los Angeles that has a bunch of old stand-up arcade games, and it was really fun walking back up to the old Street Fighter cabinet and dusting off those old 90s skills. It was a blast. We got so much to talk about this week. I'm so excited. We have an awesome guest. You know that DLC is always your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian, but this week I'm so excited because DLC stands for Days Live Streaming Comedian, as in Felicia Days, as in we've got Geek and Sundry's resident Twitch gamer, Mr. Iffy Wadaway with us. What's up, Iffy?
Hey, how's it going?
Welcome back to the show. The last time Iffy was on was when I was on my honeymoon, so I was not here. So I'm excited because I've been a fan of you for a while, and I'm glad I'm not missing out this time.
Yeah, I miss you too, but... You were probably having a dope time on that honeymoon.
I was. I was a pretty dope honeymoon, I have to admit. But yeah, you can see Iffy Twitch streaming all the time over at Geek and Sundry. But we got tons of stuff to talk about, man. Packed news week, packed games. This is the time of year, man. This is the stuff. So let's not dilly-dally. Let's get right to Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration using the hashtag DLCSOTW on Twitter or by visiting our subreddit at 5x5dlc.reddit.com. And we love getting your feedback and input on stories as well over at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Lots of fun stuff there this week. Also, thanks everybody that wrote in. Right after we recorded last week, Paris Games Week kicked off. So lots of stuff to catch up on there, which is it's a little old, but we haven't weighed in on it yet. So lots of cool stuff there. But there are other stories as well. So Iffy, you have first pick. What is your story of the week?
I think the story of the week for me is going to have to be that No Man's Sky trailer because I've been watching it for a while and it looks so good.
Yeah. Yeah. And we got a release date as well, which I think is later than everybody was hoping. There was this rumor going around before Paris Games Week that there was going to be this stealth drop of No Man's Sky, that it was going to come out day and date with Halo. And they were just going to be like, oh, by the way, it's available now for download. Boom, Halo. That did not happen. Did not happen. In fact, we're not going to get it until June 2016. So what do you think? Are you excited for No Man's Sky, Iffy?
Yeah, I'm excited. I also wouldn't have thought that was going to happen, only because, like, you know, nothing against Paris Games Week, but I don't think it's a big enough gaming, you know, expo to be like, oh, you guys, everyone's in, everyone's tuned in, guess what, check it out, boom. Like, yeah. You know, it was crazy at E3 when Xbox was like, and you can get the X-Bone now, and everyone's like, leaving the convention center.
Well, I mean, I think that the idea was it would have been a total stick it to you to Microsoft when, you know, their franchise mascot is releasing a big marquee game, trying to juice sales of the Xbox One right before the holidays. And then and Sony really doesn't have that big, you know, that big game for the season that's exclusive to their console because Uncharted got delayed. So, yeah. You know, there was I think, a little more hope than truth to that. But yeah. So June is when we're getting it. Christian, June. Do you think that that means it's going to have some PlayStation VR support? Or is it just that's how long it takes to make all the planets in the universe?
I think that's how long it makes to take all the planets. That's how long it takes to make all the planets in the universe. And I don't have any inside knowledge on this, but I do think some of this combat, like the new trailer, the Paris Games trailer they showed, was, I think, from what I've seen, the most combat-heavy trailer or, you know, any video from this game. I think that's maybe a later add into the game, like trying to gamify it a little more than just explore, mark kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there were also some rumors this week from people inside or that have had access saying that the game's been giving them problems. They've had a hard time, apparently. These are just rumors, but the E3 stage demo was running off of a PC, which isn't entirely uncommon, but they were having a hard time getting it ported over to the PS4, harder than they thought they would, since, you know, they're such similar architectures. And the game is, while kind of quote-unquote feature-complete, nothing seems to work altogether. And I don't understand game design or, you know, this particular game enough to know if that's a huge concern or if June it will come out. But I feel like whoever the powers that be are at Sony think that they can muscle this thing through. Just because to give it a date at all means something's coming out, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
They could always delay it, but something's coming. And I don't think it'll be VR support yet. I think this game might add it in. But I don't think that's the reason for the hold. Jeff, you probably think I'm wrong, but
no, I don't think you're wrong. I don't think it's going to have VR support either. That's another sort of conspiracy theory thing. I think it's more telling that it's coming out day and date with the PC. I think that's really great news. I mean, it's been so associated with the PS4 because Sony's had it as a guest on their stage at E3 a couple of times now. But, you know, the fact that it's being released day and date on PC, I think it's great news for PC gamers. I'm excited for that.
Oh yeah, especially like as a huge PC gamer, I'm so tired of getting horrible ports days.
Nice getting, catch.
Yeah, horrible ports. You know, way after. Like, I'm a big WWE fan, and WWE 2K15 was just subpar. The roster was way behind because it came out so much later. And mm-hmm. then they went and did the same thing for 2K16. So it's like, okay, so we keep getting the short end of the stick. So I'm hyped.
You're not going to have to do a WWE podcast someday. I've been dying to do one of those. Justin Robert Young is a really big fan, too. I'm, like, slowly assembling a team to do a WWE podcast. I think that'd be so fun.
I'm so down to do a WWE podcast. I got
it. That'd be fun.
You'd have two people, me and my roommate, go hard on WWE. So.
I'm always bringing up WWE things, and Christian's like, I don't – you'd stop. But, Christian, what is your story of the week?
To play the Jeff Cannata character on this week's show – I'm covering the VR story. Sorry,
no, you're people. Stealing mine. How dare you?
Sorry. I think it's big news. So they announced that the PlayStation VR will have an external processing unit.
How dare you. You
might have known as Project Morpheus. It's going to need an external box to help deliver on its premise. They call it, I love stuff like this that comes out via PowerPoint slides or whatever. Sony is calling it a PU. Short for processing unit.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I love Sony so much.
Bunch of engineers didn't realize what they were saying. I don't know. It's a PU. It's just a shorter version of the words that we've been using.
Right, which is totally where you see that this came out of the Unite 2015 developer conference. Like, this wasn't big splashy stage demo with flash pots going off and welcome to PU.
Yeah, no, this is for developers by developers.
Right. But the unit engineers. Is meant to do the heavy lifting at getting the low latency and some of the audio processing and some of the things that, you know, make this thing deliver the promise that everybody wants it to have. Because people have been saying since Sony showed off Morpheus, now PlayStation VR, that there's no way this thing can compete with Oculus if it's running off of PS4. Oculus released, you know, minimum specs for what kind of PC you need to have. And Sony has said before that the PlayStation VR is going to be the priced the same as a console, expect it to be that kind of price. And now it's starting to make sense, and now I'm starting to see some hope for this thing, and maybe, just pure speculation on my part, this thing will have legs after the PS4 also. Like, this unit can continue to offload and set it up. I don't know, but this has me far more excited in PlayStation VR than I was when it was just a headset, you know, running what would have been PlayStation 2 games because it was using just PS4 power.
Dude, I couldn't agree more. This is fantastic news, especially when paired with the first video of Crytek's VR game, Robinson the Journey. Did you guys watch that?
I did. I think you're pretty on rails, though. I don't know.
Well, so maybe you are, maybe you aren't. I'm sure you can move your head around. And I've played pretty much every VR demo. I've definitely played all of the Morpheus demos up to this point, and I've definitely played a vast majority of the Oculus demos that they've been bringing to the different events in the last year. I've seen a lot of beautiful games. I've seen a lot of amazing looking games on those devices. I haven't seen anything that looks like that Crytek demo. So if that's what they're targeting, if that's what they're, I hope that it actually does look like, which, by the way, this game, you're like this little kid that, you know, you go through a portal in time or something like that, and you end up in this crazy world with a robot companion that's floating with you, and it's dinosaurs. It's dinosaurs all around you. And it looks absolutely stunning. If the reason that it can look like that is because it's got this extra chip in the box, bring it on. Iffy, what's your take on VR? Are you excited? Is this good news?
Oh, yeah, I'm excited, but I think the future of the VR isn't going to be Oculus. It's not going to be Morpheus. I think the future of VR is going to be the things like Google Cardboard, like being able to use VR off your phone, because we already have phones. It's ready to go. You don't have to worry about buying a new peripheral. It's accessible to everyone. I think once that market starts tapping into that, that's when it's going to take off. Because right now, I think I didn't really get hyped about VR until I experienced it myself at E3. And unless they're going to sit there and have an Oculus ready to go at GameStops, I think it's going to take a while for it to take off.
Where, and if they have it at GameStop, do not put that Oculus on your face.
Yeah, for the love of God, some kid threw up in that.
He threw up out of his eye holes somehow. I don't even know how he did it. Yeah. I think you might be right, man. I think that these technologies hopefully will work hand in hand, and the inexpensive ones that still feel right, as the Gear VR does, I think will propel people into the more expensive ones, hopefully, because they're so excited about the more robust, bigger experiences. So hopefully those are the gateway drug, in my opinion.
I still think it has – so Sony, you know, kind of – they showed The Walk, which is a woefully underwatched movie, I think. That doesn't matter. But they had apparently a pretty impressive VR demo – PlayStation VR demo for The Walk, where, you know, whatever they had, like, walk 100 feet or whatever, and it had the VR on as if you were the walk is about what was it, Empire State Building, Chicago? I don't remember.
The World Trade.
Yeah, man. Well, that's like the whole thing. The World Trade Center.
Whatever.
The whole movie is like this homage to New York and the World Trade Center and 9/11, like the whole thing.
Well, anyway, I would argue that it's an homage to New York and how the city – it doesn't matter. They're all the same to me, because Spider-Man 1 and Spider-Man 2 both had a New York moment, and it doesn't get any better than that.
Okay.
Details.
Just saying, it's a pretty special place with the tragic – American tragic – whatever. It's okay. Go ahead. What were you saying?
Okay, thank you. Okay, so The Walk, what's really important about it is it's an homage to New York and the World Trade Center. So they did a demo, and they had people walk across this line – pretend line with the headset and the headphones and whatever, and people, you know, are like stumbling and falling because they're really feeling like they're up there, and it's incredible and this experience is amazing. But if you watch the video that Sony released, there's still also a dude walking behind the people doing this demo holding like a bundle of cables.
Yeah,
it's cumbersome, it's super so like I think people want that experience to like do more than just sit in your swivel chair and do VR. But unless my headset comes with like Fred who holds the cables for me. Like, again, I think we're starting to see things that are getting excited, but every time I get really excited, there's something like that, you know, pulls me back a little bit. But hopefully it keeps going, it keeps going, it keeps going.
Yeah, well, to sort of just wrap up this topic, the one that you brought up, which is the processor being a part of the Sony VR hardware, I think that's a great thing, mostly because it shows me that they're not just trying to make the least expensive thing and just try to, you know, put it out and cash grab. That it really, they really are about making the best experiences, and they're willing to sort of try to make the Ferrari rather than the Volkswagen. And that's what I want. I think that's what VR needs, especially at the outset, is to people to even if it's expensive, people put it on and go, oh my gosh. So, and I certainly, if anybody listening to this hasn't seen that Crytek video of the Robinson, the journey, watch it, because even in 2D, it's like, ooh, those are dinosaurs. It's like being a Jurassic Park. It's amazing. So obviously that was going to be my story of the week, and Christian just jumped in and stole it. So I'm going to have to, scramble. There was actually a lot of really cool reveals during Sony's press conference at Paris Games Week. So maybe we can just rattle through a few of them, and I'll get your guys' opinion on everything. I think the biggest one was the one they ended with, which is the new Quantic Dream game. These are the guys that made Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls. Two games that I happen to love. I think David Cage is a genius, and I love what he's doing. A lot of people, you know, feel like they're not interactive enough, but Heavy Rain to me is still one of the greatest games of that generation. And I really liked Beyond Two Souls a lot. I didn't think it was as good as Heavy Rain, but I'm very excited about this game, which is called Detroit. And it seems to be, what's the name of the movie that just came out? Oh my gosh, it just left
Eight
my
Mile?
Head. No.
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. Yes, thank you. Ex Machina, the video game.
No, not 8 Mile.
And it's just, I think it's called Detroit because it's kind of relating Detroit being the automobile capital of the world. Now it might be this like synthetic human capital, like they're using the same industrial assembly line kind of aesthetic to turn out synthetic humans. And you play as one. It's this character Kara, which actually was part of a tech demo that Quantic Dream released back in 2012, just kind of showing their technology. But now this is a real game, and it looks very interesting to me. What was your take on it, Iffy?
I liked it a lot. It looked really cool. It seemed like a really deep, interesting story. It's and, you know, those guys who made Heavy Rain and how great that storytelling is, it actually lets me be excited about it. I feel like if I didn't know who was making it and how well they can tell a story, I would be unsure if they're really going to push the envelope, but you know, I trust them with this, and it got me super excited. It looks really good. The trailer was very interesting. I like the way that it ended with the reveal, even though the whole time you kind of knew she was a android.
Yeah. What do you think, Christian? I don't remember if you were a fan of those Quantic Dream games.
Beyond Two Souls did nothing for me. I think I maybe put an hour in and then kind of just lost interest. I really liked Heavy Rain. I hope that this game is incredible, because I feel like I would really like David Cage et al. to not be an M. Night Shyamalan kind of person, where I feel like he's on the precipice of genius or going to be an asterisk in gaming where, oh, well, that was neat. And I hope he keeps advancing things. And there's also, there was a NeoGAF thread about this, but this is the first time that the game won't be solely written and directed by David. There's a team of three, and whether that is good or bad or whatever, it's joined by two writers in script writing, Quantic Dream's PS4 game in development. So hopefully it's going to be great. I really hope it pushes storytelling forward. And, you know, was it Warren Spector had a speech come out where he kind of said that that's not what gaming should be, that type of game, or the Uncharted types of games. Like, we should do more with the medium that allows controller or player controlled influences instead of picking from a few set things. Whatever. Whatever you want to think about what the medium should or could be, I think David Cage does incredible things. I wanted to see him do what he does, but more so. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want him to try to be someone else, but push his own envelope and don't just rest on impressive graphics.
It certainly looks exciting. A few other games looked really exciting as well, including this game Wild, which is from Wild Sheep Studio. And it's Michel Ancel's, the guy who behind Rayman and a bunch of other great games. This is the game that was teased at E3, or maybe Gamescom last year, I think was the first time it was teased. But we're finally getting gameplay footage. This is fascinating. You play as a shaman in this big open world, sort of prehistoric open world. Prehistoric, by the way, very in vogue right now, as we're seeing with all these different games. But you can possess all these different crazy animals. You can play as rabbits and eagles, and you can ride a bear. I thought it looked really, really cool. That, and also we got the first gameplay demo of Dreams, which is the Media Molecule game about sort of just creating fantasy worlds. Give me your impressions of both of those reveals, Iffy.
Wild, I think, looks really cool, but, like, yeah, I find, like, with all these kind of prehistoric kind of games coming out, I'm interested to see how it sets itself apart from the pack. And, you know, obviously the whole shaman aspect is how they're going to do it, but it's, I call it, like, the zombie effect, where, like, we had this period where we had so many zombie games, and even though they were all completely different, playing all of them, you're just surrounded by zombies, and they all feel the same, no matter how different. So,
yeah.
So, you know, it looks really good. It looks really cool. It's definitely my favorite out of all the ones I've seen. But if people flock to this whole new trend of gaming, it's going to be interesting seeing which one comes out on top.
Yeah, I'm excited because we've never really had, you know, prehistoric games, I guess, if unless you count Turok, I guess that's the only kind of one. But that really wasn't, you know, wasn't prehistoric. And I think that between the Far Cry that we're getting and Horizon and all these games are sort of setting themselves in this time, it seems interesting to me. Christian, how about you? What's your feeling? Dreams, I think you're probably going to poo-poo it, but what I saw just floored me. I was so amazed what they were able to pull off at Media Molecule.
I hope Dreams is great. I mean, I'm probably one of the biggest Tearaway fans around, and I championed Little Big Planet, I think, much louder and harder than a lot of people did. I feel like Garnet and I were singing its praises, where a lot of other people kind of thought it, you know, missed more than it hit. Dreams, I don't know. I still don't know. Like, I watched that demo, and I started getting really excited, and it was a live demo. I was like, oh, they're doing things. And then I was like, but what are they doing? I still, you know, they're flying the thing around. I'm going to spray paint a smiley face. Why would you do that? It was really cool, but I still didn't quite comprehend what I would be doing when I was doing it, unless I was doing it as a demo. Then I could see it. I'd be like, Jeff, you got to see this. You know what I mean? I don't know how it works when you're just playing it versus showing off all the weird stuff you can do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, they said something that I hooked on years ago when the first Little Big Planet came out. You know, Little Big Planet first came out, it the aesthetic alone was so engaging and so you'd never seen anything like that before. And this idea of creating and playing. And I remember when I first got my hands on Little Big Planet, the thing I was most excited about is this idea of, like, we will make something as we're playing the game together. But it really was bifurcated, right? You either played or you created, and never the twain shall meet. And even in Mario Maker, it's really bifurcated like that. You're not creating as you're playing. You're sort of ping-ponging back and forth. And, you know, while he was on stage and at Paris Games Week, what's his name from Media Molecule? My brain not working.
The World Trade Center.
He mentioned that, you know, that's one of the things they've really tried to do is mesh those two things together, that you're creating as you're playing. And it isn't an either or, that it's all happening at once. And I think if this I don't even want to call it a game, if this thing it can catch on, and it could really make it could be a animation studio for people that don't have any skill in animation. Like, I can imagine people creating fully fleshed out animated worlds and stories and shorts and uploading YouTube videos of these narrated, you know, animated movies, and not being able to draw, not being able to, you know, program. It just kind of removes the barrier of entry from all that, and you can really just create these wild, vibrant worlds that look as good as 3D animated movies on the big screen easily. And I, for that, you know, maybe it won't be something I will do, but I will be excited to see what people make with it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I kept getting excited, but I just didn't know what I would do with it. But I almost feel that same way about canvas and an easel.
Like, right. Yeah.
That's going to be beautiful.
Iffy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's the same thing, just kind of like Source Filmmaker, where like you give the masses the tools and then we get some pretty cool stuff. Like, till this day, I'm still impressed with all these Counter-Strike movies that people make and the jokes and just how in-depth people can get with it. And I have Source Filmmaker. I've opened it and I was like, oh, I can't even possibly begin to start creating something like that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of creation games, the last one I wanted to bring up is that game Boundless, that was also shown for the first time, really, which clearly is influenced by Minecraft. It looks like PlayStation wants to have its Minecraft. It looks like a much more beautiful version of Minecraft. The idea here is that it's a MMO, and you're evidently creating these kind of block worlds, but much more, I would say, much more vibrant, much more detailed, much finer point put on all the blocks. And that because it's an MMO, every single person who's playing is playing in the same world, and there's all these different portals that you can walk through that'll take you to different parts and different people's creations, but everybody is in the same space at the same time, theoretically. I think that sounds like an incredibly exciting thing. I'd love to hear you guys' opinion about it. Boundless, which is from Wonderstruck.
Yeah, definitely. I'd see the very close connection to Minecraft, and it looks real cool. And it's like, I feel like the pros and cons of trying to tap that marketplace is like, the pros is you'll definitely pique their interest, but the cons are there's so much people have already put in and established in their Minecraft worlds that it might be hard to pull them away, and you might not get anything out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Christian, what were you going to say?
That, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's it. That's the concern.
Well, it certainly looks beautiful and intriguing, and I'm interested to see where it goes. Interesting comment from Coloring Squared here in the chat, talking about Dreams. He says, Mario Maker contrasted with Little Big Planet and Project Spark show why Dreams will fail. Sometimes simple is just better. I don't know. Maybe simple is the wrong word. Maybe familiar. I think the fact that Mario Maker, it works with such familiar vocabulary, you know, of stuff that we've all grown up with, we all know inherently. Maybe that's what it is, and you don't have to invent a new vocabulary every time. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how these work. I love creation games, though. I think that they make me very excited that the tools are becoming more robust and the things you can make are becoming, you know, much less like a tool set and more like, you know, whatever you can imagine, and that's pretty cool. All right, dude. So just overall, since this is our first chance to talk about Paris Games Week, do you think that Sony impressed? Do you think that they had a good showing? Were you excited about the Sony platform going into 2016? What do you think, Iffy?
Yeah, I think it's growing. You know, they're starting to get like a good kind of stable of games, and they're trying to push the boundaries. So I'm very interested in seeing where it's going.
Yeah. And another thing I didn't bring up is the Uncharted 4 multiplayer video, which they showed, which looked pretty awesome and had a lot of unusual new features like these companions and these kind of mystical items that you can use on the battlefield. That looked really cool, too. Christian, what do you think about Paris Games Week? Do you think it was a strong showing for Sony?
I think it was. I think it was a really strong showing. I think Sony has these stage shows down pretty well now for the PS4, where they're walking a line between confidence and hubris, and they come out swinging, but they're not being totally arrogant like they were at the end of the PS2. And we're in the life cycle for both of these consoles now, where we're starting to see, you know, there's still the big games coming. Halo 5 just dropped on Xbox. Uncharted 4 is still coming down the pipe. Crackdown is coming for Xbox. We're still getting these big AAAs, but we're in the point now where we're seeing even more and more of this experimental, weirder stuff getting big stage time at shows, and I think that's awesome. I think this is, you know, the best time to be fans of these consoles, and hopefully some of these quirky titles will deliver. We only really need one or two of them to deliver to look back on this generation so fondly, and I love that there are so many trying to be, you know, that next darling. It's really exciting.
Yeah, and I think you know, the thing we always have for years, every year going into E3, the thing we always rattle our swords about is new IP. My goodness, so many new IP out of this. Like, almost every game we talked about is a brand new, know, other than Uncharted 4 multiplayer, almost all these games are completely brand new titles. And how exciting is that? That there's all these fresh gameplay ideas and things being brought to the table.
And no one remembers Haze really anymore, but they tried it. You know what I mean? And yeah. Everybody remembers Halo, and Bungie tried it. It took years to get right. They went from an RTS to a first-person shooter, from a Mac exclusive to a Xbox exclusive, and now it's the juggernaut that it is. And one of these, whether it's Horizon or Wild, you know, something's going to pop and stick, and you'll look back at this generation as the generation that gave you X game, and that's exciting.
The most submitted... Oh, go ahead.
I was just agreeing.
Yeah. The most submitted story this week from our listeners, as far as news items, didn't have anything to do with Paris Games Week. It is actually a Nintendo story about their first smartphone game, which got a date and a title, and I don't think it's anything anybody expected. In fact, it might not even be a game, really. This first foray into smartphone games is a big hullabaloo. We've talked about it numerous times on this show about Nintendo finally embracing a technology that they didn't, you know, they aren't releasing and putting it out on Android and iPhone. Now we know the name of the game. It's called Miitomo. You take your Miis, the Mii creatures from the Wii and the
and
Wii
you
U.
Tomo them.
And you Tomo the heck out of them. Yeah, whatever Tomoing is, which evidently means like sending messages to people in a safe environment and talking to people. So that's a thing. But it also is going to come with a brand new networking service that Nintendo is going to have. You'll have a Nintendo account you'll log on with Facebook and Google and Twitter, and it'll link all those things in with your email address and be used all across every platform, including NX, which is the one that they're debuting soon. But it also works with all the existing Nintendo platforms. It's one ring to rule them all. Good, I guess. Nintendo finally embracing networking in a robust way. What do you think about this Miitomo game?
I think Miitomo is going to just, you know, I don't trust Nintendo with this platform. Like, they, especially when it comes with trying to reach new people, communicate, you're just drowned in friend codes and sharing. I remember trying to go hard in Mario Kart DS and having to go on forums and get people's friend codes because there just wasn't random searches. So I know they're, you know, starting to make moves forward, but I think, you know, they're not going to go as far as they possibly could, because they always tend to trip up when it goes in that territory.
Well, I mean, it sounds like at least the messaging is right on. And you know, they've partnered with a company, this DINA or DNA or whatever you want to, how do you pronounce it, that has made mobile games in the past. So they're not doing it alone. And it sounds like they're trying at least to create some sort of universal cross-platform networking solution. I don't know. Christian, any hope for positivity here or no?
No, I think, you know, I'll be maybe not viewed kindly for this, but I think this is a really smart play for Nintendo. And as a business aspect, I think I see what they're trying to do. I mean, ruling the Messenger app on iOS and all of the companies, I mean, this is a very competitive field that a lot of billion-dollar companies think is very important. You know, WhatsApp is huge. Facebook broke off Messenger from the Facebook app on smartphones to be its own app because everybody really wants this messaging world. Snapchat is so huge and mostly used, you know, Snapchat stories, of course, but Snapchat messaging and things disappear. And the way that you are able to get youth connected and talking to each other, and then as the company, you siphon some of that data, is a very, very competitive space in the tech world right now. And if Nintendo can leverage their IP and their safe family, relationship with people, where like, this is the one that I let my 4-year-old use because it has Nintendo friendly and it's a me and it's not too complex. And then they're in the ecosystem. And if their one Nintendo account really does overarch everything, and then you're plugged into the NX or the 3DS or whatever it is, if this thing works, I think it could be a huge, huge hit for Nintendo. And you'll look back years from now and go, why do all these people swear by Nintendo again? It's because, just like before, they got them young and they're going to grow up with these characters. I think this could be big, especially in Japan.
We shall see.
We shall see.
We have so many games to talk about this week in our playlist. I'm gonna hop over to that now. But first, I do need to thank our sponsor, Linda. I'm so excited when Linda sponsors the show because I really believe in the platform. I think it's a really great thing to have one place, one repository of information that you can go to learn something new. It has a low barrier to entry, great high-quality videos of experts delivering information. So basically what Linda is this massive repository of over 3,000 on-demand video courses that you can watch to help you learn better business, technology, software, creative skills, all kinds of stuff. It's like this giant college online, kind of. It's amazing. And we can give you a 10-day free trial to check it out. And there's so much there. I think you're going to love it. And you're gonna enjoy spending those 10 free days looking around and discovering all these courses you're going to want to take. The cool thing about Linda is they have all kinds of stuff from you know, like simple stuff like Excel and Word and, you know, Outlook classes to photography, game design. There's all kinds of game design courses. If you want to try to learn how to get into video game design, it's so easy to do it with Linda. They have 3D modeling classes, Unity classes, all kinds of great stuff, HTML5, anything you might want. Experts that know what they're talking about, clearly outlined. It's not like YouTube. This is a professional platform where the best of the best are telling you their tips and tricks on how to do stuff. And the coolest thing is all of the videos are transcribed, so you can do a keyword search and it'll search the transcription and then it'll match that minute and second mark and you can jump right to the information in the video you need. So you don't have to scrub through endless videos looking for this one bit you might want to learn how to do a thing. You just jump right to it. It works really, really well. And like I said, 10 days free. All you got to do is go to lynda.com/DLC. That's lynda.com/DLC. And we'll hook you up. 10 days free. Check it out. Decide if it's something that's useful to you. I suspect it will be. lynda.com/DLC. That's lynda.com/DLC. Let them know that you heard about it here by going to that URL, lynda.com/DLC. All right, dudes, let's move on right now to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. If you and I have a similar game on our playlist, and it is a beta, tell me what think of Overwatch.
Man, I'm having a blast. I always feel bad when I like gush over Overwatch because, you know, Blizzard invited me and Erica Ishii, who's my co-host on my show at Geek & Sundry, to come down and play Overwatch. And then they sent us a little care package for BlizzCon, and I legitimately enjoy it, but like everyone's thinking like it's this sponsored plug that I'm doing, and it's like, no, I legitimately love this game, and I've been giving Blizzard my money long before Overwatch. But yeah, I'm having a blast. I think it plays really smooth. All the characters feel completely different, and you can find different team comps, and I think the best, you know, short description of it is, you know, MOBA elements mixed with Team Fortress 2, but it's so much different. Like there's a lot of people have been calling it like this TF2 clone, and it's not even like, you know, they have a payload mode, sure, but like that isn't unique to TF2, you know, team-based shooters aren't unique to TF2, like, and they did something and switched it up because, you know, before TF2, Battlefield was doing, you know, class-based, had about 5 different classes, and no one's like, oh, TF2 is the same, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in the beta as well, and no one's a bigger Blizzard fanboy than I am. I've copped to that numerous times on the show. I'm almost at 2,000 games played at Heroes of the Storm. I have, you know, countless hours in Diablo and WoW and Hearthstone. And I mean, I love Blizzard games. And the thing about Heroes of the Storm is that I didn't like MOBAs before I played it. And I didn't really, you know, I wasn't super into MMOs before I played WoW, although those many years ago. And, you know, Blizzard tends to create, you know, take the best elements of this genre and sort of distill them down. You know, I loved Magic the Gathering, but Hearthstone like just siphoned out the best bits and condensed it and made it much more concentrated fun. And I was really expecting Overwatch to do the same for me because I'm not a multiplayer first-person shooter guy. And I was like, well, thankfully, Blizzard is on the case and they're going to make the first-person shooter that multiplayer game that's for me. And I got into the beta, and so far, it's not that. It's gorgeous. The characters are vibrant and interesting, all of them. There are numerous characters, and they're all really cool looking, and they have wildly different powers. So the idea behind Overwatch is that, you know, you don't pick a class, you pick an actual individual hero, kind of like in a MOBA. And that hero has certain powers and abilities and techniques that it can do. And you can change it at any time. As long as you're in a spawn room, you can change it even mid-round of a match. You can change the character you're playing, but you're literally jumping from character to character, and they play wildly different. And the thing about it is, though, it still is a multiplayer first-person shooter, and it has all the trappings of that I find particularly off-putting and not particularly fun. The sense of isolation that happens for me in first person in those things where, like, I start out, I'm with my team. All right, maybe I'll play a support role. I'm going to be healing. I'm hanging out. I'm right behind the guys. I'm dead. Okay, I'll respawn. Yeah. And now I have no idea where my team is. Just trying to find them, running around, looking for, okay, we'll follow the dots on the screen. Okay, I found my team. I'm dead. Oh, man. And just, like, the dying so quickly. That happens in FPSs in multiplayer. It just, I don't know. I was searching to find the fun, I have to admit. But that's more of a genre problem. And it was sort of my expectation that they were just going to fix the genre for me, but they weren't. They were making a great game that people who already love the genre will love.
Yeah, and I feel like it definitely, because it's kind of the same way with my co-host, Erica. She's also not really that big of a first-person shooter fan, but she's been trying because she likes that IP. And I think, yeah, it's also a mix of just kind of the player base. But I messed that up. Player base. Because when I first got it that day, it was like me and all of the big streamers on Twitch. So, like, not only are you playing against some of the best people, but then you also got people who just don't get the game and they're trying to get kills instead of going for the objective. And for me, it was just the Heroes of the Storm beta all over again, because that was my biggest problem, is no one knew the difference. Like, you had people who knew MOBAs and they were trying to push lanes and team fight, and it was like, this is about objectives. You got to turn in those doubloons, get those seeds. Like, that's how you're going to win. Right. So I think I'd say wait a little deeper in the beta and get deeper in the beta and give it a second chance. But I can see where you're coming from.
Well, for me, you know, Christian and I were talking about this last night, right before I kicked his butt in Street Fighter 2.
Before or after I was leading, beating you in NBA Jam when you decided to quit playing it?
I didn't quit playing. I ran out of quarters, bro. I won the first quarter of NBA Jam, and then you owned me. We were talking about this last night. With the top-down perspective, which is generally how I love that top-down perspective since I was a kid. Like, my favorite game of all time is Ultima. It's like, that's sort of my jam anyway. But in a multiplayer game, in that top-down MOBA perspective, I understand what's happening. Even if I'm bad at the game or whatever, I understand fundamentally where everyone is. I understand the lay of the map. I get it all. And in the first person, and I've played, you know, first-person games my whole life. This is not anything new. And I love first-person shooters in general, the campaign modes and stuff like that. I have a blast in them. It's just the multiplayer aspect. I just feel so isolated and lonely, and I feel like I don't understand sort of the grander strategy of what my team is up to, because I can't see them. I literally don't know where they might be or what they're working on. And maybe that goes away if I get a group of people that are on headsets and we're all communicating to one another, but I wish there was a better solution that could just make it more clear for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I hate to be the one to say this, but I think Splatoon is your game.
Yeah, because it's third person, and
it's third person. It's easy to see where people are and where they're going.
You call me a baby. You're saying you're a baby man. You're some sort of baby man. Splatoon is
I'm saying Splatoon is an excellent game that did what you were hoping Blizzard would do in terms of taking a traditional style game, a shooter. You know, not, I know it's not first person or third person, whatever, and reinventing it and making it accessible. It's not about killing. You don't get eliminated really quickly and you're out of the match. You don't know where your teammates are. It's only gotten better over time as they unlocked all of the features. I know there's a plethora of games coming out, but if Splatoon gets a good deal on Black Friday or something, pick it up, add it to your backlog, and then whenever you sit down to play it, I think you'll have that aha moment. I mean, Nintendo's good at that, right? I mean, what they did with Smash was look at the traditional 2D fighter and say, how do we make this not about getting owned by Chun-Li?
Right.
And I
never had fun with Smash either. But
okay, well, yeah. I don't know then. Maybe not. Maybe you just hate fun things.
Well, maybe. No, I think I'm pretty decent at fighting games, and I think I've gotten good at MOBAs, and I like playing first-person shooters. I've just never been good at first-person shooter multiplayer games. And I find the rapid way you die, and I've never in a MOBA gone, what just killed me? And in a first person shooter, I say that constantly. What even killed me? And then you see the kill cam, and it's like, oh, there was a guy behind you who did a thing. And it's like, well, that's not fun. I don't know.
That's life too, apparently, though. But you don't get to see the kill cam.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It was cancer the whole time. Terrible.
That's very true. That's very
terrible. Terrible. What else is on your playlist, Iffy?
Well, the other thing I started playing, I don't know if you heard about this game, but it's Warhammer End Times Vermintide.
Oh, yes.
So I've been having a blast with that. And for those of you who kind of don't know what it is, it's basically Left 4 Dead in the Warhammer universe. And instead of zombies, you're fighting Skaven, which are these rat people. So it's really fun. I think it takes Left 4 Dead and puts such a interesting, fun twist on it. Like, you get loot drops, you get, five different classes, so you can find, like, your ranged weapon or your melee weapon and upgrade it, and you can take it to the forge and upgrade it. So it adds, like, a huge RPG element to Left 4 Dead. But it's not Left 4 Dead, but it's that style.
It looks really cool, and Warhammer universe is so ripe for all kinds of crazy games. I like that they're mining it and doing different, unique, interesting things. This is you playing it on Steam?
Yes.
Yeah. Again, it's called Warhammer End Times Vermintide.
Yeah. Also, if we can go back to Overwatch real quick.
Sure.
For me and Dan Casey from Nerdist have come up on a speculation that Overwatch is not only going to be a PC release. We have a huge hunch that it's going to come out on consoles too. Reason being is, I don't know if you play with Xbox remote or any type of gamepad on your PC.
Mm-hmm.
But if you plug it in, you will see that the mapping is just perfect.
Yeah, and it actually changes the icons on the screen to show you Xbox buttons when you that. So it knows, and I think that would be an interesting big reveal next weekend at BlizzCon.
Yeah, are you guys going to be there?
Heck yeah!
Oh, I'll be there. Let's meet up.
Let's do it.
Friday, I'm actually going to be live streaming the newest trailer for the Warcraft movie with Legendary. So, check that out. I'm pretty stoked on it.
Cool, man. Yeah, we should definitely hang out. I'm really excited about this BlizzCon. It'll be interesting to see if they drop that bomb. I think there's going to be some definite big surprises.
Oh, yeah, just because there's nothing we don't, like, aside from the new WoW expansion, there's nothing we can even, think of that they would come. Maybe a big, either a early D4 announcement or D3 expansion. Some people think D3 expansion. I think with the new season system, it'd be kind of hard to implement an expansion to that.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be like an early D4 release, maybe something StarCraft related, because now we know this is the last of the trilogy, but they've been really quiet on what's next.
I'm really excited. My buddy Alex Albrecht is hosting for Blizzard. He's hosting the live stream, so I've been peppering him for information, and I have a few nuggets, but nothing I can share here. But I'm really excited. I think it's going to be a fun year.
Oh man,
yeah, and we'll be talking about that next week. So yeah, definitely tune in, listeners, on Monday. What else? What else you got on your? I think I was going to say something, but I can't remember what it is now. What else you got on your playlist there?
Secret Ponchos. I don't know if you've played that, but it's a really good indie game that it's like a very competitive kind of arena fighting game, and you're these kind of like spaghetti western archetypes, and it's kind of like an over-the-top shooter, and it's really fun. Like, all the different characters have different abilities. I would recommend you try it because it's kind of like what you want, and it's not Splatoon. You know, it's a very adult game because it's not Splatoon.
It's the first time I'm hearing of it, but I'm Googling it now. It looks pretty rad. Secret Ponchos looks cool. Yeah. Neat art style.
Oh, yeah. It's super fun. It feels very much like a Tank Girl Gorillas style.
Hmm. Awesome. So it's Secret Ponchos, and you're also back into the crack that is World of Warcraft. Is that right?
Yes, I got dragged back in. It was so funny because I kept telling people, "Oh, I keep kind of going back," and it was because I was playing Elder Scrolls Online for a bit, and I had the premium, and like that was my big thing with playing WoW. Was like, well, if I'm not gonna be playing that much, then why pay 15? But I wasn't playing Elder Scrolls that much, and I was paying 15, so I was like, let me just bite the bullet, go back to WoW, play it with it a bit, because I'm really excited for Legion. Like, I was a big Burning Crusade fan, really liked the whole Illidan Storm Rage storyline, so I'm like, I just need to just jump back in.
Yeah, that new expansion is going to get me back as well. It looks so cool. But are you enjoying the There was a patch recently that added like ship building and all kinds of crazy stuff. I haven't tried that yet. Is it rad?
Well, I'm still only level 91. I just got back in just a few days ago.
Well, you got some good content ahead of you, man. That last expansion content is really, really strong, I thought.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard the complaint wasn't really about the game. It just people got bored after they finished it. So yeah. I was like, that's not bad, especially if I'm joining for Legion, then hopefully by the time I finish this content, then I'll be in Legion. So
yeah.
I just knock out the problem.
That's pretty smart. Love it. Christian, how about you? You finished Halo this week?
I did. I wasn't able to really talk about it with you guys last week. I have finished the campaign, put in a couple hours in Warzone and in traditional multiplayer as well. You know, longtime listeners of the show remember when we had Tim Longo on, he was the creative director at 343, and me saying like, oh man, you guys have some pressure. Halo 5, like he kind of bounced from big studio to big, not bounced, but worked on some very big games at some very big studios and kept taking these roles of, you better deliver. and man, I think Halo 5 does. I think everybody at 343 should be really proud of what they did. The fact that no one is complaining about multiplayer not working says so much, right? It's like when you're at the restaurant, you always hear the person complaining to the waiter about how everything is horrible and everybody's in that person's yelling. But we never do that when things work right. You never hear the person going like, my sandwich is perfect. Thank you.
Like, the bread is the perfect level of sponginess.
I ordered a really weird drink combo and sandwich with tons of substitutions and you got it all right. Like, that's what we should be doing for Halo. I know a few people had some connection problems early on, but man, oh man, a huge, huge game. I'm sure there are tons of people playing, and it's just been really, really stable for the most part. So I think it really deserved to be sung its praises for that. I think the game is very good. It's very Halo. If you don't like Halo, this isn't going to win you over. If you're, you know, a Half-Life 2 guy and you've never enjoyed the go through a narrow hallway, get out into a big open area, and take
you're
out
a Half-Life 2 guy, and the last first-person shooter you liked came out in 2002.
Well, they're still holding on hope. Yeah. There are others. It's just an easy example of different play styles I was going to. But yes, you are right, and now I feel stupid. but, I mean, it's Halo, right? They do it, and they do it well. I think the level design maybe... Some of the levels aren't the best ever, but I think also people have a tendency to conflate every past Halo into their favorite Halo, if that makes sense. It's kind of like the SNL. I think people do it with SNL, too. Like, oh, my God, I love Gap Girls. And like, oh, what sketch is your favorite? And then they tell you a hybrid like of like...
amalgamation of all of them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, my God, Halo and the Scarab drops. And then all of a sudden when you're in the library, and the next thing you know... When and it's like that's Halo 1, 2, and 3. You just described three Halos to me.
Right.
But I think it does a lot really, really well, and I wanted to lead with that. I do have some criticisms, but I want to stress the game is very well done. Multiplayer works. Warzone isn't going to be the thing that keeps me coming back, but I applaud them for trying something new and different for, you know, the big multiplayer pull. I think it's fascinating, and that, you know, they put so much into it. Of course, you know, it's where they're going to make money with microtransactions eventually. But I think that there's a lot to be said good about Halo 5. One of those other things, I think we talked about this last night as well, Jeff, is the way that they handle race and gender in the campaign. Everything could be done better, of course, but this is a game where you have a strong female protagonist. You have a strong black protagonist. John, who knows what John is? Maybe John's black, too. Maybe he's Native American. We've never seen his face. But you have people of many races and many genders in strong leadership roles throughout the world. You have a woman, you know, go out and get the crap kicked out of her, but not in a traditional, like, weak woman way, like the way any soldier would have the crap kicked out of her. And she stands up and fights back, and it doesn't champion any of this. It's not like Halo 5, where you play as a black dude, or like, yeah, finally, women, be a woman. It's just like, this is a game, this is a world, and of course women have leadership roles. Of course a black dude, yeah, is the leader of this strike team. Why wouldn't he be?
Right.
And I think that's really cool.
It's just, yeah, it just is. Yeah, that's great. Agreed.
So a couple of my nitpicks, and I don't think there are any spoilers here. If you want to avoid anything, tune out for a little bit. But this is very broad. I think the way they marketed the game hurts the story. They marketed it as, you know, Hunt the Truth, Locke versus Chief, battle, that awesome trailer where they're at that statue of Chief, and they pull their guns on each other, and it's like, oh no, this is going to get hype. That's just not the story of the game. That's maybe a level, if that. So I think that does the game a big disservice, because I was going into the game thinking, maybe Chief is bad, maybe Locke is bad, maybe this we're going to get some great revolution, maybe there's a rivalry, and Halo 6 will be something really cool between these two people, and that's just not the story of Halo 5.
Like the Halo when they said the battle is going to reach Earth, and it's like one level on like a barely Earth, and you're like, that's what this was about?
Well, it reached it. It literally reached it and touched it. And then
okay.
Left. Yeah. Yes. So I guess, yeah, they have a history of that. And I think that's
whichever
a shame.
One that was.
Because there's a really cool story to be shown here. I mean, the game is called Halo 5 Guardians. You could have had dope trailers about Guardians. That's all I'm saying.
I think the Guardians are ridiculous, but that's just me.
Really?
Again, love the game, but I think the Guardians are... they have no internal logic. There's no, like, they make no sense. They're just large. And because they're large, they're scary. I don't know. Like, every time they show up, it's like, well, those are big. We should be frightened of them. And then they don't move in a way that doesn't make any sense. And I don't know. Whatever.
Well, they're big guns. That's what makes them scary. It's like if you see a nuke coming up over the horizon, you're scared. You're not like, that nuke has no internal logic.
Why does that nuke look like a person? Like a Shogun warrior? Why does it? I don't know.
No, it looks like a it doesn't matter. Anyway. Okay. No, maybe it does matter. We can keep talking. It doesn't matter. I'm making points here.
Yes. Go ahead.
And then... I feel like that you don't really connect to any of the characters. You instantly connect more to Locke and Team Osiris because they show their faces. And they can't show John's face for some dumb reason because they haven't for so long. And so when I see Nathan Fillion and when I see you know, Locke with his helmet off and emoting, I'm immediately drawn to them. And Chief and Blue Team, I don't know.
Dude, I completely disagree. I'm so
really?
Much more drawn to Locke just because... He's the guy that, like, he's the guy in the series that I've played over years. What did I say, Locke? I meant Chief. Yeah. I mean, the fact that you barely play as Master Chief in the game is a major bummer to me, because he's the guy. He's the dude. He's the main character of the series. I don't understand that.
Well, I'm saying as a story progression, I think they do interesting. I feel like I'm more compelled to learn more about Locke and his team because I see them interacting, whereas Chief is just in a helmet running and gunning the whole time. And I think that's a problem that the series eventually will need to overcome. Otherwise, it just gets awkward. It's almost like an in-joke. Like, we can't show you Chief's fate. Show us. Just show us and don't make a big deal of it and move on. Because if you want me to relate more to this character, I need to see their face at this point, especially when I've seen everyone else's face. And then the biggest problem that I think Halo has is that it's a game that's now, what, 7-8 games in, and I don't think the lore could support it. The biggest problem that this game has in terms of a narrative is the overuse of proper nouns. The story itself is pretty simple, but when it's like the Guardian, the Contundrum, I could just make something up, you know, the Tundras are coming over across the forges to intersect with the skylines, and then we'll all be afraid of the bottle tops. And you're like, what?
You mean, kill stuff? Every story is like that. I mean, every story is, you know, every fantasy story has got, you know, hobbits and trolls and orcs and all, it's all mumbo jumbo unless it's infused with meaning. And I think the problem is that none of that stuff, it might be infused with meaning in all the ancillary products that have to do with Halo, and all the Hunt for the Truth audio drama and the books and all that stuff may infuse it with meaning. But somebody that just plays the game is so out of the loop of that stuff. And there's so few concessions to the player to bring them into the fold that it really does just sound like mumbo jumbo at a certain point.
Right. And I mentioned that to you, you know, to you last week where, yeah, fans of the lore probably have a lot more to like. But another way that something can be infused with meaning is by giving it meaning. And I guess that's what you're saying. Like, the people in the game, there's no, you know, don't just say a name, then say why the name is important afterwards. And I think you could
tell us a story that isn't just referencing things that are happening someplace else. Like, give us a story that's an actual story and not just a regurgitation of lore. That's my point.
So I tweeted out, and I have it on Facebook. I thought about maybe reading it here, but it's too long. I'm not going to do it. I put up, it's like a, you know, 2-page note doc of what my pitch of what a Halo story would be. I wrote it all in, you know, in 5 minutes or typos, I'm sure. But I stand by it. I stand by it. The basic pitch is you're like an ODST type soldier going through this game, and the whole story is you're just trying to get some MacGuffin, whatever it is, and then at the end of the game, you're outnumbered, outgunned, and you've set out a distress beacon earlier in the game, and then Chief answers your distress beacon, lands, and you play the last level as a super overpowered Chief, and it's just awesome, and you're killing everything, and you save the day, and you fly away, and then it zooms out, and you're that original soldier retelling his story to his buddies, and they all kind of nod along, and they're like, man, that's incredible. But you thought that was incredible. Wait till you hear how I met Chief. And then, you know, it's like four...
Halo
names.
Stories.
Yeah, Halo Stories, The Legend of Master Chief.
And the Legend of the Campfire.
Yeah, 100%, yeah. And it's pulls cool. from different sort, you know, other media has certainly done that approach before too, but what Halo is great is the combat. So just give me the combat, really simplify the story, make it, like we talked about last week, a World War II type story. You got to go defend this thing. You got to trudge from point A to point B, and along the way, you're going to come across resistance. That's all I need. I just want to fight.
But the game does give you that. It's got a shell of this big story that I think is a little clumsily told. But the game is excellent. The combat is excellent. The stuff you do in the game is really cool. The firefights are thrilling and interesting and allow for variety and improvisation. And that's what I want out of Halo. And I think it's an easily recommendable game. And it's just unfortunate it's not a, you know, story home run. But since Halo 1, the series has never had that, in my opinion.
Well, that's why I led with singing its praises. And I think it's interesting. Yeah. I texted you. I think I like Destiny better than Halo. And looking back on it, it's tough. They're different. I think I like the moment-to-moment shooting feels better to me in Destiny. But what makes Halo so great, like you said last week, is it's linear. And so when they introduce a mech, you're ready to drive a mech. You're like, yes, this is a great change of pace. Or when you get a Scorpion, you're like ready. And with Destiny, you never really get those moments because you're not being guided through the universe. Halo, it's good.
Cool. Have you played it, Iffy? Have you played Halo 5 yet?
Yeah, I played it. Actually, on Geek & Sundry, we had some of the voice actors over and played through 5. It's super fun. It's been a while since I played a Halo and just got wrecked, but I got to use the Elite controller, see how that felt, and it was really nice. Oh, yeah. It feels so nice and meaty in your hands. The triggers are a nice touch. I'm trying to decide whether or not it's worth getting to play on, like, the PC. Because I'm not sure if the triggers are going to be compatible with, PC right away.
Yeah. My playlist is... it feels weighty in your hand as well. I had a crazy week. And the craziest thing about this week is that halfway through, a game arrived that I'm not even allowed to tell you what it is, but I'll just say that it made me fall out of my chair. So it took up a lot of my time playing that game that I'm not allowed to talk about, but I can talk about next week. But it's nice that all these games are out right now because it's fall outside. And it's cooling down. the point is I didn't play as much of all these games as I would have liked because it's fall outside and, there's things to do anyway. So, put in a lot of time on the Overwatch beta. We already talked about that a little bit. A couple of games that I already knew I loved and are now out on new platforms, happened this week, including Divinity Original Sin. I got it for Xbox One. I will say, it was my game of the year last year. My very favorite game of the year last year was Divinity Original Sin. And what they have done with this new enhanced edition is really great. It is really cool seeing the game on a big screen, controlling your characters with a controller. It works well. It's awesome. I mean, it transferring a point-and-click game, top-down point-and-click game, to direct character control actually feels really good to me. And the game is beautiful. They say there's like over 1,000 enhancements that they've made to the game. I'm not deep enough to sort of recognize those yet. And I put so many hours into Divinity Original Sin on PC that I don't know if it's because there's so many other things to play right now. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go back through and replay it. But I can tell you that it's fantastic. And if you didn't play Divinity Original Sin, maybe because you don't have a PC or you just missed it, I could not recommend it higher on the console. It really works well. It's a fantastic game. Again, my game of the year last year. So the other one, actually, there's two others like that that are on new platforms, including the Deathfinitive edition of Darksiders 2. Deathfinitive edition because the guy's name is Death, who you play as Death. It's Deathfinitive. This is Darksiders 2 with all of the DLC content they released in one package for the current-gen consoles, or PS4, Xbox One, graphic updates. I mean, it's not a complete revamp, but it does look really pretty, very high-res textures. Darksiders, I think, is criminally underrated. The first Darksiders game is so good. It is the high-def Zelda we have all been waiting for and still continue to wait for. And it was like the mature content Zelda. It's that Zelda template done with this kind of edgy Joe Madera designed art style. And it's awesome. Darksiders 2 is that again, but they add loot. They add Diablo loot. So like it's Zelda plus loot. It's like two of my favorite things in the world smashed together. Really cool traversal of the worlds. A fun God of War style combat system, but you have that Zelda style puzzle elements and traversal elements. It is fantastic, and it looks great on these current gen consoles. I played, I don't know, about 3 or 4 hours of the Deathfinitive edition, and it's great. I really had to force myself to put it down. Didn't help when that other game arrived. That actually made me put it down fast, but I think I'd still be playing it if I didn't have anything else to play. It's so good, and I think I'm scared at how poorly it will sell because the competition at this time of the year is so stiff. But I really think if you missed out on Darksiders 2, give it a shot. It's an awesome third person action game. It really is good. Woefully underappreciated. And then I also, Kevin Pereira, I did his show, and he hooked me up with the download code for Assassin's Creed Syndicate. So I got to check that out a little bit. Wow, was I impressed. Again, didn't play a ton of it yet, but early impressions is very positive. Wow, is it? Does it bring you into the world, and the first few missions really feel fun and dynamic and interesting, and my goodness, that like steampunk... Well, not steampunk. It really is Victorian London. It's not trying to be steampunk, but it feels a little steampunky just because of the, you know, you've got your assassin gear and stuff. But just that Victorian London and the style of that world is one that I enjoy just generally in my fiction. And so seeing it realized so vibrantly in this game is pretty impressive. And really, it drew me in. And, you know, like within, I don't know, within like half an hour of playing, you're like on a... train chase, and you're jumping off of things and flipping around and assassinating dudes in a brewery, and like, it's cool. It's super cool. So those I have been playing, as well as putting ridiculous number of hours into that that other thing that I'll talk about next week. I'm very excited. So that's my playlist. Iffy, did you play any of the Darksiders games at any point?
Oh, yeah. I was a big fan of Darksiders. I thought it was really good, really interesting, really fun.
Yeah. It's, do we lose audio? Chat room is saying that we don't have audio. No audio. Well, we will continue on.
Well, don't worry. If you're listening to this on the RSS, you're like, what are they talking about? Sounds good to me.
That's right. Okay. So yeah, let's Darksiders. It's just a... Did you ever play it, Christian?
Yes. Yes. One, yeah. Never two. One was a beautiful... It made me want a big bad Zelda more.
Yeah, right? And we still don't have that. So,
and we probably never will. Darksiders is really good. This game... Yeah, what a weird time for this game to come out though, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's carve out a little bit of tabletop time.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Right now.
Iffy, I know you're a tabletop guy on the Geek and Sundry. You guys are all tabletop folks over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you play anything recently that you want to bring up?
I mean, well, definitely big into Dead of Winter right now as we're in the spooky season. But there also is this new game. Let me get the exact name because it's kind of a mouthful. But it's like a deck building game that kind of, I feel, mixes Little Magic the Gathering in there and really...
Oh, Ashes? Are you talking about Ashes?
There we go. Ashes, yeah. Rise of the Phoenixborn. I have it. I pre-ordered it, so I got some fun goodies with it. And I find it so fun.
Yeah, Christian and I actually played this at the Geek and Sundry Tabletop Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I remember, we bumped into you guys.
Yeah. Super cool. It very much is... It's sort of Magic the Gathering plus dice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you play as a Phoenix Born and you summon creatures kind of like in Magic the Gathering, and you're sending your creatures at people. But the difference is that you also select these pools of dice that are separated into different categories, and depending on how you roll the dice, you can activate certain powers that you have on the cards in front of you.
Yeah. It's a very, very fun system because I feel like because of that, it changes up, whereas, like, you know, you get the draw power and you can get the right mana to use any card in Magic, but in this one, it's all luck every turn.
Interesting. Yeah, and you like that. You enjoy the addition of luck. There's a lot of stuff in the game to mitigate luck, right? You can, like, affect the dice in certain ways, too. Yeah.
I felt like there was an Inception level mind wrinkle that I couldn't quite get my head over, because it almost was, I mean developers are probably yelling at me like, that's not what we're doing, but for someone like me, it was kind of two games in one, and so it was folding over on top of itself, like, okay, what modifier is doing, oh no, and like, that's the way I beat you when we played that first game. Jeff, I think that's what happened to you, is that you just misplayed because your attack would have been perfect, but then because of like the dice you rolled or whatever, you left everything else open.
Right.
And it's really complex in a good way, but in a sit down and like someone rushes you through a demo at PAX or, you know, Geek and Sundry or something like that, I think don't be discouraged if you don't get it right away. Like, let your brain fold over itself until you see what this game is doing, because it's not magic.
Yeah. Right. Well, even magic can be a little brain burning if you don't have any experience with that style. But one of the things about Ashes Rise of the Phoenixborn is the beautiful art. Every card is really beautiful, in my opinion. I really liked it. Game that I've been playing is for Halloween night, my wife and I went over to her mom's house and decided we were going to hand out candy to the kids that came by her mom's house. It was fun, had some family over as well. So I thought I'd bring a new game that I had that we could play relatively quick and easily. And a game that I kickstarted is called Two Rooms and a Boom. And I recently got, like, over a year after the Kickstarter, I finally got my copy. Very excited about this. This is a game, it really is a big party game. You can play as many as 30, 40, 50 people at once, Two Rooms and a Boom. We played with 6, which is the minimum you can play with it. Now, I really got it in the hopes of having like a Two Rooms and a Boom party, which I still intend to do. But I wanted to try it out with a smaller group. The idea of Two Rooms and a Boom is that you have two groups in two different rooms, and each person has a card, and on that card, it tells them whether they're part of the red team or the blue team. And one member of the red team is a bomber, and one member of the blue team is the president. And the red team is trying to get the bomber into the room with the president so that he can explode and kill the president. And the blue team is trying to keep the bomber and the president in separate rooms so that the president survives. And there are a number of rounds where what happens is everybody has a secret, their card is secret, so you don't know who is on which team, and equal numbers of people are in two separate rooms where they can't hear each other, and they elect a leader, and that leader decides to send over a hostage, a number of players in one room to the other room, to send them across to the other room. And that room is sending a player to them. So you're exchanging hostages, and you're trying to make sure, if you're on the blue team, that when that hostage exchange happens, it doesn't end up with the bomber and the president in the same room at the end. And if you're on the red team, that's exactly what you're trying to create happen. So it's a game of bluffing. It's a game of trying to figure out who is what, where people lie. You can show people what you are, or you can keep it hidden. You can do all manner of discussion and working things out. But the fun thing is, unlike the Resistance or One Night Ultimate Werewolf or a lot of other, you know, kind of bluffing and secret role games, if you find out who's who, it doesn't end the game, because you still have that crazy situation where it's kind of like that scene in Princess Bride where, you know, Fezzik is saying, I clearly can't do the one in front of me, because you go, well, they know that I know that they know that I know. So are they going to send the bomber over? We have the president. Are they going to send the bomber over here? So if they are going to send the bomber over here, should we send the president over there? Because then that'll work. Or should we just hold on to the president thinking that we're going to send the president over there, and then they'll send non-bomber over here? You know, it's like, what are they going to do? What are we going to do? Really fun. I would say 6 is actually not enough people for this. It really does better with more people, because the discussions are more fun. And then when you get to a certain level of people, certain number of people, you can introduce all other roles so that everybody sort of gets a special move that they get to do with their role, force people to show them their card or react in certain ways to cards. And that adds another layer of strategy to the game too. It's a blast. I mean, literally, I had a good time. I think my group was a little overwhelmed by the idea and warmed to it after a few rounds. The best thing about the game is that the rounds are so fast. They're timed. So the first round only takes 2 minutes, and then, you know, 1 minute. So it goes quickly, and you can play. We played like 4 or 5 games of this back to back. And people were really digging it by the end. And I think it would work even better if you had a large group. So again, that's called Two Rooms and a Boom. And I think it's pretty inexpensive to find online at this point. Cool. All right, dudes. Well, you know what? We have some extra time. I want to do this. I've been putting this question off for a while, and since we have Iffy here, he's got a lot of experience with board games as well. I want to read this. This is from Matt. He sent this to dlcfeedback@gmail.com, and he said, I know Jeff at least has a lot of experience introducing people to new games. Any suggestions on the best way to do it / explain the rules? My group used to always play strictly deck-building games like Legendary and DC Deck Builder, but I really like the tabletop scene, and I'm trying to get them to try new things. I usually have a hard time getting a group to pay attention to me long enough to explain the rules. Usually, they get impatient and grumble with, let's just get started, and get frustrated when all the rules weren't explained. Rule books need to be consulted, or they make bad decisions because they didn't pay attention to everything. The most recent disaster was Evolution, which I thought would be great because it's pretty easy to learn and explain. Two people created carnivores right out the gate. Everybody else protected their species, and the carnivores went extinct. Two turns like that, and the carnivores threw up their arms and walked away from the table. Anyway, after the deck builders, I really got into the hobby, bought a lot of games, and backed a lot on Kickstarter. Now I have a hard time getting people to try all these new games. Maybe I just need a new gaming group? What do you guys suggest? And that's from Matt. So, Iffy, what's your take on this? Have you ever experienced that thing where you're trying to play games with a group of people and they don't want to, you know, pay attention to the rules?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a whole new whole new play group thing, because if you're not willing to sit around and listen to the rules but get mad when you make a mistake because you didn't listen to the rules, then you can't win, because if they're not going to sit around, or, you know, if you want to try, be like, well, you remember last time when you got pissed because you couldn't play? It's like, maybe listen to the rules so that we do it right. Or, you know, you can do it the kind of like classic D&D way, where you send out the rules, maybe find a PDF or something where you can email everyone in the play group before the game. And at least, you know, the people who are really interested, they'll learn the rules. And I think the more people who know the rules can prevent things like that from happening, because it'll be like, he's doing this thing and you can't because XYZ. And then Everyone's like, oh, yeah. And then it prevents that from happening.
What do you think, Christian? You've been in this situation on the other side of it often with me trying to explain the rules. What's your feeling on that experience?
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening when you read the email. This show stinks.
Well, you are losing at the game of the show.
So. As always, you just wall bounced right over and head stomped me, and then went right into a leg kick. Honda's too slow.
That's how you do.
It's a relic, not a relic. A new play group, or have a sit down serious discussion with that play group and be like, look, this isn't Vine. It's going to take a little bit. This isn't even a lot of modern TV shows. This isn't even a lot of modern pop songs that don't, you know, it used to be like, what, chorus, hook, pre-chorus, chorus. Now it's just like ringtone, chorus, ringtone, chorus. And that's all there is. And we like that. We like short attention span.
How dare you say that about Taylor Swift? How dare you?
I didn't mention Taylor Swift. I actually think. How dare you? That a lot of her not written by her songs aren't that per se, especially when they're performed by someone that's not her. But if they're not willing to sit down and listen, it's like it's the problem in everything, right? The person you bring them over and or you're watching a movie with someone and they're on their phone and then they look up and they're like, wait, I thought they were dead. Well, you missed the Lazarus pit. Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily as you as the person explaining the rules to come up with like a fun gimmicky way to, it's like, okay, here's what you got to do. Everybody listen up. Create a game for the rules. Make it fun. Make it rewarding. When they listen, they get a gold star. If they listen to two rules in a row and can implement them in the game, give them a piece of candy. You got to reward the listening. It's like, no, man, if they don't want to listen and play the game, that sucks, but go to your local game place, Game Haas here in LA and Glendale area. There are many of these in many cities around. And if not, reach out, on Board Game Geek or something like that, and find a supportive group of people where you don't need to coax someone into playing, because that's not going to be fun.
Well, another take is, I always like...
All right, let's get ready with the parting gift.
You sort of have to cater your rules explanation to your group. You know, my wife is one of those people who she learns by doing, and she keeps saying, let's just start, and I'll pick it up as we go. And I find that very frustrating because I'm one of the people that needs to know all the rules before we start. Like, I need to know what's going on and every little detail before I start. So we come, at loggerheads often on that. But what I find works really well, actually, is practice round. This one doesn't do anything. We're not keeping score. We're not keeping track. We'll reshuffle the cards or whatever. We'll start over. But let's just do a practice, go through one round or two rounds. Not a whole game, but just to see how it goes. That really helps. I also feel like the way you explain rules can go a long way. Like, the worst thing you can do is just sort of read the rule book out loud to the group, because nothing is mind-numbing more than that. You kind of have to digest them yourself a little bit and be able to come at it in a more conversational way. And
Jeff, we're on you in 5, 4, 3...
I don't get it.
Hey, guys. I'm Jeff Cadotta, and I present you the rule book for D&D 5th edition. Do you like dragons?
I think it has more to do with, like, explaining the goal first. Like, okay, here's what you're trying to do in this game. Here's what the goal is, and here's how you go about doing that. And, you know, there's going to be – there's an art to it. There's an art to explaining.
Oh, my God. We're setting up the Patreon today, and it's going to be – Jeff explains it, and people will submit games that they want explained to their groups of friends.
I hate to say it, there's already a thing like that. It's called
Watch It Played.
It's called Watch It Played, and the guy who does it is fantastic.
Oh, so just go watch that.
Fact, a lot of places use him in particular, or other ways to put out official videos. Like, he makes money from board game companies when they hire him explain the rules, and he's very good at it. Although he's very Canadian. And his accent is he pronounces the word card like curd. So you take the curd, and it's very
so you'll do the American version. Like, there's the British office, and then there's the American office.
Right. He's fantastic, and I often learn games just by watching the Watch It Played video for that game. And oftentimes in the rule books, they'll have like a link to that. So anyway.
Well, I've now taken down the Patreon, and with it, all of my hopes and dreams.
All right, guys, let's wrap that up. I don't think that was helpful to anyone, but that's okay. we got a parting gift to give you guys, so stick around for that. But in the meantime, I do want to thank Iffy Wadaway for being here. Iffy, this was awesome. I really appreciate it. Where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at @ifhe'snotfunny. You can catch me on the Geek and Sundry Twitch Mondays. I'll be on tonight and Wednesdays. If you're at BlizzCon, make sure you stop by the Legendary area where we're going to be showing off that new trailer for Warcraft. I'm going to be hella hyped for it. I cannot wait.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's exciting. I'm very excited for BlizzCon. It's going to be – it's always a great show, and I think this year is going to be particularly exciting. Christian, how about you? What do you got going down? You're going to be at BlizzCon.
I will be at BlizzCon on Saturday for a little bit. This Thursday, the 5th, I will be at Sketchmelt here at Nerdmelt in Los Angeles. The 12th is Improv versus Stand-Up at UCB Franklin, also in Los Angeles. If you are in the Phoenix area, I will be at the Scottsdale Laugh Factory the 19th through 22nd. And then Stuart Knocked, Wombat from Cheap Ass Gamer, and I do a dumb, silly little podcast called Uninformed Opinions, where we just kind of babble about anything for 20 to 30 minutes, and you can find that on iTunes and stuff like that. Mr. Kanata, what's going on with you?
Well, I've got the / Filmcast. This week we are talking about Beasts of No Nation, which is on Netflix, so keep an eye out for that. That's at /filmcast.com. And we have concerns. We just released today. We released our 200th episode of We Have Concerns. They're only 20 minutes long, so why don't you dip into a few? There's a lot of fun there. It's a comedy science show at wehaveconcerns.com. And also today, I start my first day on Tomorrow Daily. So that'll be over at CNET. I actually don't know the official URL. It's Tomorrow Daily on CNET. So if you search for those things, you'll find it. I'm doing a mini episode today, and then we're going to do some BlizzCon coverage for CNET also. It should be fun. All right, guys, let's wrap things up and give those people a parting gift.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Iffy, do you have something to suggest to people to get them through their week that might not be a video game?
Yeah, I think, you should definitely, check out, well, I want to suggest that I just don't like the platform, but I just got into an anime called One Punch Man that's been really good. It's One on Punch Hulu, Man. but I feel like Hulu has really upped the commercials now that they've released that new commercial-free option, because I was watching it, and it was just a whole bunch of commercials within such a short span.
The bad thing about Hulu is that it's not that they have a whole bunch of commercials, it's that they have one commercial a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
And you literally are watching the same stupid commercial 8 times back to back, and it's like, just bore a hole through my skull. That's what's happening right now. It's like Chinese water torture. It's crazy. Anyway. But that's called One Punch Man?
Yeah, One Punch Man. It's pretty good.
Awesome. Christian, how about you? You got a parting gift?
Yeah. Try not lying at all. For real, for a day, or if you think that's easy, try a week. And I mean not at all. And I'm not talking liar, liar, you know, don't be ridiculous, Jim Carrey, but not at all. Because we all do, whether it's a little white lie, something dumb or silly or whatever. The most recent example, I was at, you know, checking out at my local neighborhood Vons, and they always have some like donate a dollar for this cause or whatever, you know, when you check out kind of thing. Do you want to do a dollar to stop world hunger or whatever it is?
Did you see the South Park?
No, is that what they did?
Oh, it's so brilliant. Oh. Did you see it, Iffy?
No.
Oh, it's so brilliant. It's that. It's the dollar to stop, and it's ridiculous and amazing, and how they shame him into, it was a whole episode on public shaming, and it was like how they shame him into one point. He's like, so how do I not give the dollar? And he goes, well, there's a cardboard like little kid, homeless kid. And he's like, all you have to do is just pull the sandwich out of her mouth. He's like, it's not going. Yeah, yeah, just put your foot on her face and pull the sandwich out of her mouth.
Yeah, so I'm not condoning what those tactics, like, it is, you're there to buy groceries. It's hard to be hit over the head with, there's horrible things happening in the world and we could all be better people. But the woman in front of me, they go, do you want to donate a dollar? And she goes, no, you know, It's almost Thanksgiving, and I already have my giving budget lined up, and I know I'll have more between Thanksgiving and Christmas, so I'll be sure to come back to this Vons and donate then, probably, you know, like mid-December is when I'll probably come, and I'll donate a few dollars then.
She doesn't protest too much.
It's just long thing, and just say no. And everybody has an example of that, where you lie a little bit, and just try not to for a day, a week, whatever you can. No lies. No lies at all. It's fascinating, I think. I did it, that was Thursdays at the store, Friday. And, I mean, I'm done now. I mean, I lied through this whole episode. I haven't played Halo at all. Just read a lot about it.
my lie this week was that the game did not actually make me fall out of my chair.
Right, see? Yeah. Your also lie was that you can't even say the name of it because you did four times.
No, I didn't. I will deny that to my grave.
There's another lie. Anyway, it's a fun little mental exercise to do. There's also a story on it. I think it was on NPR. I was like on KCRW about how easy it is. This is months ago, but how easy it is to lie and believe your lies and you don't even realize you're doing it. Anyway, take a break. See if you can go a day or a week without lying. And then lie to me and tell me you did it.
An interesting challenge. The Spicer challenge. I'm going to do something that is much easier to do. A show that I have just been binge watching, because we're going to talk about it tonight on the Slash Filmcast, is Project Greenlight. I watched those old Project Greenlights back in the day. And the new Project Greenlight that's on HBO this season, I kind of ignored. And the guys were like, no, we want to talk about it. So binge watch it. Oh, man. I started watching the first one at like 11 o'clock one night, just streaming it on HBO Go. And I stayed up till 2, just binging. It's so compelling. The reality TV hooks that this Project Greenlight season has on HBO is pretty intense. I found it fascinating and interesting, especially as somebody who has been on a set and, you know, is in Hollywood and has a lot of experience sort of behind the scenes on movies and stuff. It is really fascinating. So we'll be talking about a lot on the Slash Filmcast as well, but watch it. The movie that Project Greenlight is about, which is Project Greenlight is about making movies. It's sort of a behind the scenes documentary about making this movie for
a first time. It's about ruining young directors' future careers.
Well, I don't know. The first guy, Pete Jones, yep. He's still working. He's in fact in this season. Yep. Yeah. Yep. So who knows? It's about giving people a shot. But the movie that he directed, that you see the behind the scenes of him directing, I think premieres tonight. So perfect time to catch up on Project Greenlight. I found it fascinating. So highly recommended from me. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this edition of DLC. Thank you to Iffy Wadaway, Christian Spicer, Maggie and Hattie and Dan at 5x5. Thanks to all the people in our chat room. I think we lost you at some point. I don't know why. I feel bad, but thank you guys. You guys are always my favorite part of the show, contributing as you go, as you listen. So thank you for that. And thanks to everybody that downloaded the show this week. Hey, why not give us a 5-star review on iTunes? It really does help. It does increase the viewability of the show. People can discover it easier. It's great. Or even better, or maybe recommend the show to a friend. We appreciate that. It's a great way to spread the word. DLC is every Monday live on the 5x5 network, 5x5.tv/live. And we're here at 11 a.m. Pacific time on Mondays. Until next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.